It's absolutely a dead end, and if you and there, it has no future. There's no way to fix it.
Well, I mean, I'm looking today, Carl, and another talking about parlor tricks and card tricks about what Pfizer did with this oral pill they've cooked up, and it says, oh, you know, it's going to effectively, one of the folks from Pfizer said, effectively end COVID, and I'm saying, oh boy, here they go. Based on what?
Well,
based on what?
Well, you know, the Merck, the Merck drug that the UK, I guess, has approved it on an emergency basis. Now it hasn't been fully reviewed, but they're going to let people use it. You know, there were people saying that that was basically an ivermectin kind of thing. It's not. I know the class of drugs that the Merck drug is in.
Molnupiravir or something.
I wouldn't take that thing if my life depended on it. It tampers with DNA replication, with the process of replication in the body.
Well, we looked at the trials of that, Carl. We looked at the earlier trials in the history of it. It wasn't very successful. And then they kind of had
it's dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. And that's the problem is that particular class of drugs tampers with things that are extraordinarily hazardous to screw with. And again, if you have cancer or something that is invariably fatal, it's probably worth trying. But to use it for this kind of a purpose is nuts. Now, I haven't looked at the Pfizer drug in close enough detail. What I understand is it's in the same category as a number of HIV medications as a protease inhibitor. And I haven't looked at its mechanism of action yet. So I have to go through that one and do some study on it. The Merck one I was familiar with because they were talking about it months before it actually showed up and, you know, as trials being completed. This one I haven't taken a close look at. If it's essentially a optimized ivermectin kind of compound, it might be acceptably safe. Does it work? Well, it might. But on the other hand, if it's $700 and I can buy all the ivermectin I want for 20 cents a pill, why in the hell would I use it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I got COVID in August, okay, yeah. And it was Delta, you know, it's the nasty one, it's a Delta thing, and I used both ivermectin, and then when it started to go bad on me from a standpoint of pulmonary involvement, I hit it with budesonide, and between the two, I beat it without having to go to the hospital or anything
right.
like that.
That's good, because it can go spin out of control.
Well, but it threatened to come after me, okay? And, I mean, it was, you know, I'd been using prophylaxis, which was all nutrient-based as opposed to drug-based because I don't believe in using drugs unless I have a reason to. But as soon as I knew that I was infected, I hit it hard. And it didn't help that I had been attacked by a massive swarm of yellow jackets a few days earlier, so my immune system was a little on the busy side. But that also probably kept me from knowing what was going on for a couple of days as well, because, you know, I was busy dealing with that. That's the thing, is that we've paid no attention to this, and yet every virus in the history of mankind, we've known that if you're going to try to treat it at all, as opposed to just letting it run its course, you have to do it early. And that's just the way it works. You can't do anything. What you're dealing with is the after effects if you don't do that. And so the idea that you're going to let the viral infection do whatever it's going to do, and then you're going to try to suppress whatever kind of side effects it causes, I think it's just lunacy, and yet that's been the approach that we've taken on this thing. You know, you get COVID, go home, and if you're choking, come back and see us. That's nuts.
It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. My wife had it. I did a show on it, and then we all got it. Myself and my kids got it, and all at the same time, zero for four. And I had it the least, so I was the quarterback on everything. And her doctors, they would have let her go down the tubes. We were real close to going into the hospital, and then I got hydroxychloroquine in here just in the nick of time. We were, like, right there on the line where it was, like,
right.
You know. And then she turned around, but I'm saying, these doctors, and this was in April, right, of this year, March and April. And so I was, like, the word really wasn't out that the doctors are sending people home to just go down the tubes and then go into the hospital. And so that was a big revelation to me, sitting there watching this scheme play out with the doctor say, oh, just go home, and if it gets bad, go to the hospital. And we all know what happens when you go to the hospital. But it's really stunning. And you know, the headline that's buried here in the stuff that you've compiled is that, you know damn well the CDC and the FDA and the NIH, if you compiled this stuff, you know damn well that they know what's going on with the lot numbers, and they have much better statistics than VAERS.
Well, not only that, but HHS has it because CMS has all of the treatment data for every person who's on Medicare or Medicaid, okay? And so this was one of the things that I pointed out back in 2020 when this thing started, was that we knew conclusively, for example, that hydroxychloroquine was likely effective. We knew that budesonide and other inhaled steroids were effective. And the reason we knew that is that CMS has the data on everybody that has lupus and RA that has been using hydroxychloroquine for years. And it's used as a maintenance drug for both of those conditions. It's been used for a very long time. And anybody that has lupus is probably on disability. Therefore, after 2 years on disability, regardless of age, you qualify for Medicare. It doesn't matter how old you are. So they have data on every one of those people who's been taking that drug on a long-term basis. It's sold as Plaquenil in the United States. And an awful lot of people that have COPD and emphysema are using budesonide or other inhaled steroids as a maintenance therapy because it's used for those two conditions. It's what's primary indication. Well, when I ran the data on deaths in different groups, lupus and RA are not broken out in the CDC's death statistics and wonder. So I can't get information there. However, COPD and emphysema are chronic lower respiratory diseases. And they actually had a lower rate of death in 2020 from those two conditions than they had in 2019. Now, during a respiratory pandemic that gets into your lungs and screws your lungs up and kills you, you'd think that those people would fall like flies.
Okay, especially COPD, because you'd think they'd all be dead.
Exactly. Okay? Well, not only were they not all dead, fewer of them were dead than were dead the year before. So at that point, once you saw that in the data, and that had to be obvious to these people in the first few months of this thing, the obvious thing is, what are these people using that is giving them protection? Because they are clearly going to get this virus just like everybody else does, but they're not dying of it, and everybody else is. So why is it that they're not dying at even the rate they were dying at last year? Okay. And that right there, there's your list of things that you investigate, because it's obvious, it's easy. These are maintenance medications. We know they're safe because people use them for years. And by God, you ought to test every last damn one of those things right now. All right? Because what is the harm of giving somebody any of those drugs for 2 weeks when you have people on these things for 5 years at a time without, you know, them having serious adverse events? It was insane that we did not do that. That kind of a query, it takes 30 seconds if you have the data, okay? And CMS has the data. So we deliberately did not look. We deliberately let these people be slaughtered like this. And it's, you know, it was all to protect the idea that we were going to have this new industry with these, you know, with this technology. And now, as it turns out, this technology doesn't work. And that's the bottom line, is that from what I can see here, yeah, okay, you get some protection for a little bit of time. You know, you get some protection from infection for a few months. You may get some, you know, for a somewhat longer period of time against really bad things happening, but it sure as hell doesn't keep you out of the hospital, doesn't keep you from dying, and doesn't keep you from getting it or giving it to others. So from the standpoint of all of the things that we were told about these jabs, they're all, it's a failure across the board.
Well, I was going to ask you, we have a 19-month, I guess, 19, 20-month window, maybe longer depending on you know, how you analyze it. What's your take on the whole thing? I mean, from the start until right now, as far as
this respiratory virus is following the same pattern everyone has followed throughout history. Okay, we've made it worse in some ways. We've actually exacerbated it. We probably created Delta by trying to vaccinate in the middle of this thing, which is stupid. And any epidemiologist that has three firing neurons to rub together will tell you that you don't do that because you place selective pressure on the agent to evolve around it. All right. And that's just basic. I mean, this is basic natural selection. Okay. Viruses and other infectious agents, they don't have brains, but they are most successful when they get to a lot of other people, but they don't kill them quickly because if you kill your host, and if you make them extremely sick before they can give it to someone else, then people avoid them because humans are reasonably intelligent. If somebody's hacking their lung out, they're not going to get anywhere near them. And so you have to manage to get into another host because you can't survive outside the body. That's just the way it is. And it has nothing to do with intelligence. It's just that those mutations that don't serve that purpose fail. They are ecological and epidemiological failures. And they don't survive. And the ones that do manage to do that go onward. So we had a respiratory pandemic in the 1890s that we're pretty sure was caused by another coronavirus, which now circulates through the population. So OC43 causes mostly colds and mild flus. In old people, it occasionally kills them. Okay, gee, this sounds rather familiar, doesn't it?
Exactly. It sounds real familiar.
Yeah, and in the 1890s, it killed people on a somewhat regular basis, and it did so with the kind of outcomes and the kind of progression of disease. It sounds an awful lot like COVID. Now, we don't have any samples from that period of time, so we don't have any way to know, particularly to look at that. So we're not really sure, okay, whether or not that's what it was, but that's the most likely culprit because we weren't able now. 1918, we actually have some fixed slides of lung tissue and stuff from the H1N1 strain. So we're reasonably sure that actually what killed those people wasn't a virus at all. It was secondary bacterial infections, and we didn't have any antibiotics. So if you got a bacterial infection, your body either fought it off or it killed you, and that was just the way it worked. Okay, so I mean, it was like, in World War One, it sucked to be you if you got shot in the gut for the same reason. But with the 1890s pandemic, it wasn't. It was the same sort of, systemic shutdown, kidney failure, heart attacks, things like this. The sort of stuff that happens with COVID, weird clotting disorders that kill people. They get sick, and all of a sudden, they would die. And when somebody took a look at what was going on, they had all kinds of weird organ damage that didn't make kind of sense that you'd see with normally. With types of things. Well, after a couple of years, it kind of faded away into the background because it mutated. And the same thing's going on here with COVID. Delta, by all the data, is easier to transmit, but is less lethal. Not a lot, but a little bit. There are two specific genetic sequences in Delta that are missing that were in the original Alpha, the original strain that came out of Wuhan. And those two, it appears, are partially responsible for the thrombotic stuff, the nasty differentiated clotting in the body that killed people all the time in Lombardy and over in Italy and stuff, and in New York, for that matter. Delta is missing those two mutations. Those two genes aren't there. So, it's just amino acid bases, but they're different. And that's what natural recombination does. It's natural mutation. It's the way it is. But what you're seeing now is essentially that you have among children, my best guess is you probably have 60% prevalence of protection at this point, against reinfection or anything more serious than the sniffles because they've had it. In May of this year, the New England Journal of Medicine published a study that showed that about 20% of the adults had COVID. They had antibodies against the N protein, right, which are not vaccines. Okay. Well, then the Red Cross stopped running the screening on their blood donations. So we don't know what's happened since then, but that was in May, as of the beginning of May, about 20% of the population of adults had COVID. They'd been infected. Where are we now? Probably 30 or 40. You've got some vaccine protection among young people. It's even higher. The reality is that the easy to kill people are dead. They were killed last winter and they're gone. So if you look at all cause mortality among people over 80 years old, it's actually down below baseline, below the expected rate. And the reason is you can only die once. So it takes time to refill that group of people. Well, a lot of them passed. But, you know, when you have an average life expectancy of, you know, 77 or thereabouts, and a bunch of 85-year-olds die, those were all people that were past their use-by date. And it's sad, but you could blow most of those people over with a feather. And that's essentially what happened here. So, I mean, there's, you know, is there excess mortality among other groups? Well, yes. But on the other hand, the if you look at the New York coroner's data, which I've been studying and following since this thing started, take a guess at how many people of the age of 85 without one of the nasty list of comorbidities have died of COVID.
How many?
Since take a guess. How many?
20.
People over 85.
20 people.
Seven.
There you go. It's not what you hear in the media, though.
Well, statistically, zero.
Right.
Okay. Now, that doesn't mean that a bunch of people over 85 have died. They have a whole lot of them. But essentially, all of them were obese, diabetic, high blood pressure, had kidney disease, that, you know, had one or more of a list of things that we know make it easier for this virus to kill you. And so those people, they got hammered. Well, if you look at the data across the different age groups, you see the same sort of pattern that essentially, unless you have one of these things wrong with you, the odds of this virus laying you out is very low. It's not zero. Somebody gets a short straw. It happens. I mean, I'm a distance runner. I run half marathons. Okay. And I got hit pretty good. If I hadn't been paying attention, it might've got me. And, you know, I don't want anybody to think that it can't happen because, you know, it came after me pretty well. On the other hand, I got something in January, the first week of January in 2020, that I thought was COVID, that was far worse in terms of long-term impact. It took me about 4 or 5 months before I got all my cardio capacity back. And, objectively, that was way worse than what I dealt with when I got COVID. And so, you know, now, of course, that I didn't hit with any kind of specific meds because it looked and felt like a flu at the time. We didn't even know what COVID was. And although that's what triggered my, you know, my going after getting antibody tests and things like this, because when COVID started, I assumed that I had it in January. As it turned out, I had not. I had no antibody. So that, okay, that wasn't COVID. That was something else. And it now appears that what that was H1N1, which was going around in the early part of 2020 and in 2019. And my guess is an awful lot of people we claim died in the early months of COVID actually had H1N1.
Right.
They actually were killed by flu. But of course you can't say that because, you know, that takes away from the severity of this unique thing.
Well, with everything we know about this and everything you've done, everything I've been reporting on, a lot of other people have been reporting on, just one inconsistency, one spin, one lie after another. Why are we now in a situation just a couple of days ago where they are putting this into the arms of the little kids?
Well, because you can't stop, because the problem is this, you can't say, look, what are the three words you never hear from politicians? I was wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially, so they're in too far. They're in too far.
Well, especially not when you killed three. Well, especially not when you killed 500,000 Americans.
Yeah. You can't turn back.
Which they did. Well, yeah. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Well, the way this ends is when the people of the country say it's over, fuck you. Okay, and frankly, we're getting there at an increasing rate. I saw some polling data that says that only 1 in 5, even in, and that's an extraordinary number if you think about it, they're 20%, are in support of firing or otherwise canceling people who refuse to take the shots. That they think, you know, and this is, and of course, that's the vast majority of people who have been vaccinated.
That's exactly right.
So,
yeah.
So I mean, the screaming, you know, the screaming Karens you see on social media and in the press and the Walensky's, is that there is no support for that position in terms of the general public. That support just doesn't exist. And the idea that there's a vanishingly small percentage of people who are refusing to get it is bullshit, too. You take a look at New York. You got, what, 20-25% of the garbage collection is not happening because the people said,
it's
fuck you, and got
there.
Laid off.
It's bad up there.
Yeah, so you got, you know, you got bags of trash all over the place. Well, all right, so, you know, you tell me whether or not you believe that 95% of the people are knuckling under and taking the shot when there's, you know, bags of trash piling up. All over. That's obviously a lie. All right. So, you know, this whole thing is unraveling quickly. And my guess is that what they did with OSHA, I mean, the OSHA thing is blatantly illegal. I used to be a CEO. We had to deal with some of their stuff. I used to do software, in fact, for a group of companies, brand companies that did asbestos abatement where, you know, OSHA, of course, has their fingers in everything. And that was back in the 1980s and early 1990s. And so I understand the regulations and where those boundaries are because we used to do code for those guys. And they have absolutely no authority to issue this. Secondly, even on an ETS basis, their record of not having those things struck by the courts when challenged is terrible. I think their record of actually having those sustained is only about 1 in 3.
That's why they've held off on putting it in writing, because as soon as they put it in writing.
They know they're going to get sued. Yeah, they knew they were going to get sued immediately. Right. Okay, and now they have been because now it's been published. So now the lawsuits will get filed, and there's injunction demands coming from all sides. My guess is those get granted. You're going to see injunctions because this is clearly a irreparable harm situation if you take the shot and end up with a bad result. And then the other problem that the government has here is that when you have an extraordinary situation like this, the remedy that they propose and that they put forward has to be the least intrusive that accomplishes the goal. Well, OSHA shot themselves in the head. They literally put a gun in their own mouth and blew their brains out the way they wrote the standard, because by allowing masking as an alternative, they have admitted that there is a less intrusive way to meet the goal. So they blew their own head off by the way they wrote the ETS.
Well, they have to also have to provide some proof that this works. There's some actual data. There's some actual studies.
Well, the thing is there's so many different prongs of the test that have to be met that they've shot themselves in the head with all the way around. Okay. So, you know, that's basically the problem that you have here, is that these guys, you know, essentially you had to, and you had the Biden administration came right out and said, we know we can't do this through ordinary executive orders, so we're going to use OSHA as a pretext. And that was, you know, that was in a news report. That's admissible. And you're going to have that, you know, those people within his administration hauled up in front of a judge. And, you know, he's going to say, hey, look, guys, I'm sorry, but pretextual actions are, you know, they're flatly illegal, period, end of discussion under the APA. And, you know, and Trump got hammered that way on a number of things that he did the same way. Okay. And justly so. So, you know, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is let's play threaten the American public games. And it's just, you know, let's go Brandon. It's not working out real well for him. I think that Virginia was as much about this as it was about the situation with with a criminal so-called child deciding to abuse a transvestite law to rape a girl. I mean, that was certainly part of it. The idea that, oh no, you don't have any right to talk about, you know, what happens with education of your children. That doesn't go over very well with people that have kids. But the idea that that's all it was, I think, is total crap. I think you've also got a lot of pushback coming from the people that are seeing what's going on out in California, New York, and saying, maybe not.
Exactly. Well, what happens legally if, they came up with this OSHA thing, this fake mandate, so to speak, or whatever you want to call it, and you lose your job. I know guys at Citi. I was at Citi for a long time. Guys at Citi, yeah. They've given people, and it's a subsidiary, so they've given people a deadline. If you don't get your jabs, you're out. You got to leave. What happens when this entire thing collapses? What's the recourse they have? Can they get their jobs back? Can they sue?
Absolutely. Well, yeah. This from my point of view is. I think you've got an awful lot of corporations that have gone far too far down the woke escalator
exactly
over the last couple of years.